if it must be given to babies, orange or lemon juice or acidophilic should be added. Our human system is a living example of biochemical warfare, due to drugs, injections, devitalized foods, tobacco and alcohol. These are the poisons of our world. Overconsumption of animal proteins, candies, cakes, pastries, white flour, white sugar, alcohol, tobacco, drugs, carbonated drinks, ice cream, and all foods treated by poison sprays, poison gases, commercial fertilizers, bleaches, etc. Those rugged individuals who do attempt to eat natural foods must pay 3 and 4 times the normal price in our so-called health food stores. Thus the average family cannot afford to buy the proper foods unless they can grow it themselves. It would require a complete changeover in our agriculture and food processing industries to give the people natural foods in unadulterated form. In the long view it would save a lot of money, but big money interests in established food processing, slaughterhouse, commercial sprays and insecticide industries, the pharmaceutical houses, the tobacco companies, would suffer huge losses during reconversion. Such a reconversion could come about only by enlightening the people and putting some teeth into the Pure Food and Drug Act, which continues to be ineffective against the overwhelming testimony of the cumulative effects of the addition of retardatives, chemicals and poisons to our food by manufacturers and processors every day. Which brings us to the subject of chlorination and fluoridation of our drinking water. Natural fluorine does prevent tooth decay when taken naturally in foods, but chemical fluoridation of our water supply is a crime against mankind. Are you aware of the fact that the addition of sodium fluoride to our water supply can affect our powers of reasoning by drugging a certain area of the brain which makes an individual more submissive and docile, much like the surgical effect of frontal lobotomy? This latter atrocity has been perpetrated upon victims of the Nazi regime and more recently upon unsuspecting patients in mental institutions. This type of chemical and surgical warfare renders the populace submissive and easy to control. Sodium fluoride in your drinking water will, after its use, affect the rear occiput of the left lobe of the brain, where there is a small area of brain tissue responsible for an individual's power to resist that which is alien to his basic good. If these words are shocking or strong, they are written only in the hope that they will awaken people to the vast scope of the conspiracy, the accumulative mass of negative thinking and acting, which assiduously feeds into the public brain via radio and TV, a negative approach to life and thus undermines the dignity of the individual and dulls his spiritual perception. Can you imagine what would happen to the people of New York if all of them consumed water tainted with sodium fluoride for a period of years? Surgery and drugs are extreme emergency treatments and should be employed sparingly. Dr. Carlton Fredericks of radio station WHIR mentioned in one of his programs that the physician of tomorrow will be the dietitian, and conversely, the dietitian of tomorrow will be the physician. Angelshevan.org. The physician of tomorrow will attack the problem of poor health on the proper battlefield, the blood. If the blood is made healthy through proper and therapeutic diets, it can withstand attacks. I was given information about proper diet for my son, who was, at that time, suffering from brain tumor and cancer. It was suggested that I feed my son fruit and vegetable juices, minerals, fresh fruit and vegetables, such as apple-banana combination, cabbage-parsley-carrot combination, raw. The idea was to keep the blood alkaline at all times. An acid blood is a perfect incubator for disease germs. It was also recommended that I see a Dr. Thomas, a true physician of tomorrow, who had cured more than 20 cases of cancer by the application of proper diet and the administration of optimum amounts of minerals. I went to this fine gentleman and asked him to help my son, whereupon he informed me he had given up the practice of medicine in favor of biochemical research in soil nutrition. He said he was tired of being criticized by a powerful medical organization because he did not overcome cancer by orthodox methods, although doctors had come to him to study with him and learn his techniques. One time, when his products were at issue with the court, The judge was presented with evidence, including a case history of a patient who suffered from bladder cancer. The patient, who was present in court, should have died 2 years previous according to hospital records, and this fact caused the judge to remark, "To stop his, Dr. Thomas, work would set this science back 1 century. Each century produces a genius, such as Pasteur, Koch, Einstein, and Dr. Thomas is no less a light." The judge then dismissed the action. Dr. Thomas had read to the judge for 1 hour in his chambers the histories of a great number of cases treated by doctors and hospitals in the treatment of which Dr. Thomas' products and methods were used. He explained that during his biological research between 1908 and 1915 he had discovered a peculiar microbe which was constantly present in cancerous tissues. When the blood, however, had been regenerated, the microbe had ceased to grow. He explained how he had subsequently commenced his research into the production of a complete organic fertilizer which would produce better balanced foods from soil. In 1953, researchers at Columbia University discovered that our soil was deficient in amino acids and the trace elements, which, if restored to the soil, would eliminate disease in plants, animals and man. Dr. G. H. Earp Thomas, now in his 80s, agreed to help my son if I could obtain the services of an AMA-accredited doctor to cooperate with him and accept his techniques. We asked a doctor in the vicinity to cooperate with Dr. Thomas, but he, like others, refused, even after seeing documents and affidavits attesting to the elderly doctor's work and success with cancer patients. My son was next taken to Dr. Hox's clinic in Pennsylvania for examination and possible treatment. The internal organs were found to be too far gone, especially the liver, which made treatment inadvisable at that point. I believe that if my son had been taken in time to the clinic, a cure could have been effected, or at least an arrestation. And I am positive that if Dr. Thomas had been allowed to treat my son, the cancerous condition could have been halted. So not being allowed to practice his techniques in the cure of cancer, Dr. Thomas decided he would attack diseases at their source, in soil nutrition and in the food we eat. Through his research he developed a type of organic fertilizer under the trade name of Organa which replenishes the soil with minerals, vitamins and the trace elements. He also invented the digester which digests garbage and makes a perfect organic fertilizer from it. I also learned, quite recently, that Dr. Thomas has been experimenting for many years with growing cultures and small plants in jelly. The jelly is completely safe from bacterial attack and the plants are healthy and vigorous. He recently showed me such a plant in a test tube growing in the gelatin substance. This same, or a similar process, is used on other planets. Dr. Thomas is a true scientist and researcher, 100 years ahead of his time, and I hope that someday soon his genius will be recognized. Vi. A New Concept of Nutrition by G. H. Earp Thomas, Earp Laboratories, High Bridge, NJ. Author's Note, I present the following because I consider it a must for those interested in their own good health, their children's health, and the eventual good health and nutrition of all mankind. This is an excerpt from Volume 2 of G. H. Earp Thomas' publication titled Cause of Diseases Overcome by a New Concept of Complete Nutrition. Dr. Thomas, graduate of Tewendian University, and Trinity University, inventor, lecturer, author, and biologist of international renown, developed PharmaGerm, the first successful pure nitrogen culture for the inoculation of legumes. He developed the first system of composting with bacteria in compost cells, a kinetic soil analysis system. Among his other accomplishments have been, patenting the first composter for disposing of household refuse, the first complete organic fertilizer, the first preparation of trace minerals for deficiency diseases, the first pure composite culture of legume bacteria, the first lactic acid culture to improve ensilage in silos, a new complete food for chinchillas, the first complete organic fertilizer made from fish and from vegetable wastes. All of these developments and inventions have been used successfully both domestically and abroad, some of them for many years. He also made a new food to supplement meals and was the first to include all 32 factors needed for nutrition. He also introduced to the medical profession a new concept of disease, and prepared the foods including the trace elements to found a new system of medicine, biochemical therapy, and was granted a diploma for so doing by a medical college. He is also a noted radio and television speaker, Howard Menger. More than 6,000 hospitals in the United States operate 24 hours a day. These hospitals have a combined capacity of approximately 9 million patients. Yet ailments such as heart afflictions, cancer and nervous disorders are on the increase. Approximately 165,000 licensed medical men and probably four times that many unauthorized healers daily try to control disease. But the avalanche of death continues to march on. This nation has laboratories by the hundreds, experimental stations, clinics and countless health departments functioning as efficiently as an endless stream of dollars can make them. Great foundations for human betterment, with branches throughout the civilized world, are constantly issuing glowing reports of their work. Thus the public is led to believe that the health millennium is just around the corner. But always, always something interferes with the full fruition of these dreams. The death toll continues to mount. The combined efforts of all these agencies appear to be of no avail. The battle for health is a losing battle. Each year finds the Grim Reaper more and more triumphant. Such facts are not mere suppositions. Neither are they an unexpurged alarmist's propaganda. Figures, checked and rechecked, tell the gruesome tale. No amount of fine words, no amount of Pollyanna speeches can conceal the dismal truth. So far as civilized health is concerned, science has failed, failed miserably. There is a reason for this failure. Providence cannot be blamed. Providence has not cast an unfriendly eye upon this land of ours. Not at all. The failure is the direct result of science taking the wrong road approximately a century ago. Theories and rules were made then without sufficient laboratory research. And many of these theories and rules may then since have been proven unsound and unreliable. Yet science has gone a long way on this false road. It resentfully refuses to admit its mistakes and to retrace its steps. It will not wipe the slate clean and begin again. Instead, science tries to harmonize its latest discoveries with the incongruities of its false position. And such harmonization cannot be successfully accomplished. Early physicians valued minerals. About 100 years ago, the physicians were beginning to understand that the human body needed various kinds of minerals in order to maintain health. But it was mere speculation as to what those needed minerals were. They believed the body needed lime for the bones and teeth, or technically, calcium. They believed that the nerves needed the mineral phosphorus. But just how the body utilized these minerals they did not know. In those days, calcium was ordinary lime. Phosphorus was ordinary phosphorus. What these physicians did not know, what they did not realize, was that the minerals, the calcium and phosphorus and others must undergo a definite change in character before they can be utilized by the human body. They did not understand that minerals, in the ground, are vastly different from those minerals of the same name the human body receives in the food that is eaten. Ordinary calcium may be splendid to whitewash a cellar or plaster a wall, but it must be vastly changed before our body can use it for bones and teeth. And the human body alone cannot make this change. Yet even today science clings to that outmoded belief that in some instances the body can use such dead minerals. Iron not all assimilable, of course. It has been demonstrated that if dead iron is injected into the blood of a human being, a definite reaction is produced. The blood becomes flustered from the presence of this outside element, and science erroneously draws the conclusion that this mere excitement of the blood is absolute proof that such dead iron is utilized by the body. Unfortunately, a microscopic examination of human blood fully 10 years after such injection will show traces of unassimilated iron. The rest is eliminated from the blood. However, it does aid organic iron to enter the circulation to make hemoglobin. It is known that inorganic iron does pass into the blood circulation, and its only value is that it aids in the passage of any organic iron that may be present in food. The organic iron joins to form hemoglobin of the blood, but the inorganic iron does not and is eliminated from the blood as useless in the wastes of the body. What is more, no laboratory experiment today has shown that the iron of a nail, taken internally, can be changed by our body into the iron that our blood can use for nourishment. In theory, such a transformation in our body takes place. In actual practice, positive proof is lacking. Physicians, 100 years ago, did not understand that chemical changes in the minerals were necessary. To them, calcium was calcium, whether it came from a lime kiln or from the food we ate. Thus, science started off on that false road which leads down the passages of time into today. In spite of the increasing knowledge regarding nutrition, orthodox science steadfastly refuses to acknowledge that its original conception of minerals is wrong. Many nutritionists, however, soon realized this error. But their suggestions for making a distinction between these two types of minerals for the most part fell on unhearing ears. Organic mineral compounds superior to inorganic minerals, however, these same nutritionists continued their researches, and these two kinds of minerals were classified. These minerals, as they come from the ground, such as iron, calcium, phosphorus, silicon, sodium, etc., were designated dead substances. This means they are not suitable for food. They are now called officially inorganic minerals. Those same minerals, after they have made the trip through the digestive processes of a plant or a microbe, and have been chemically changed so that the human blood may absorb them, are called live substances. These minerals are suitable for food. They are now called officially organic minerals. But even so, science acknowledges no such difference. In a late issue of a guide to national advertising issued by the National Better Business Bureau is the definite statement: some advertisers have represented that organic mineral compounds are better than inorganic, and that organic minerals are the necessary or proper form in which minerals must be obtained in the diet. In general, there is no established scientific basis for this premise, and in some cases, the facts are quite the reverse. The availability of a mineral for human nutrition does not depend upon whether it comes in an organic or inorganic state, but upon solubility and other factors still under investigation. In light of the above, it is well to bear in mind the testimony of the great Dr. Charles Mayo of Rochester, Minnesota, offered to a congressional committee in the city of Washington, D.C., not so many years ago. He gave it as his opinion that there was absolutely no relationship between proper diet and disease. How that idea has changed in the light of experience and laboratory tests during the past decade. Note: I made these notes many years ago. Now it is recognized that proper diet may not only relieve practically every type of disease, but in most cases the correct food may absolutely prevent the human body from catching ailments. I will enlarge on this in later pages from recent research. Even today, no sensible scientist would tell you to place an iron nail in water, let it rust and then drink the rusty water in order to obtain iron for your blood. They would know that such iron would merely pass through your body without being absorbed in any manner. What is more, science knows that iron extracted from plants, after it has been chemically changed from dead iron, will not melt. It cannot again be formed into a nail. No process known to man will render it dead again. Not only that, but no sensible scientist would tell you to break off a piece of plaster from the wall and swallow it in order to get lime for your blood, your bones and your teeth. Science knows that such lime, such dead lime, would be absolutely useless in the body. Yet science will not admit officially that, as far as the needs of the human body is concerned, there is any difference between organic and inorganic minerals. It is certainly time the public was made to understand this mineral situation. It is certainly time for the man in the street to be in a position to judge just what type of minerals his body needs. It is certainly time for everyone to be informed that all minerals to be used by the body must first be digested by fruit, vegetables, grain or other vegetation. Reliance upon inorganic minerals, either in medicine or food, is not only unwise but it is also dangerous to health. No wonder that science has made a botch of its battle with disease. It is standing on a false platform. No wonder there is not one single disease in the tens of thousands recorded in the medical books after which can be placed the words, perfect cure, in the same manner that QED may be appended to a successfully worked out theorem in geometry. Common cold may be just a symptom the National Better Business Bureau, ever alert in its efforts to prevent themish use of any wording respecting the advertising of a remedy, concedes in its printed booklets that not one single remedy known to man can be used unqualifiedly to denote a positive cure for a single, solitary disease. Even the common cold, which incapacitates more people than any other ailment in the United States, is still shrouded in mystery. The cause of a cold is unknown. Yet it is said that one out of every two persons has at least two or three colds a year. How the cold enters the human body is still wrapped in mystery. What the cold does, after it arrives inside of us, is only the vaguest sort of speculation. And yet, the cold is strictly a product of our civilization. The savage in the tropics and the Eskimo in the frigid zone do not know the miseries of the cold. Only when they become civilized do they experience these attacks. Not only is the common cold an unsolved mystery, but there is no known remedy, so far as science is concerned, for such everyday afflictions as arthritis, rheumatism, heart trouble, kidney disorders and liver ailments. Even the word constipation has come under the ban and cannot be used over any reputable radio broadcasting station. Many physicians declare through us no such thing as constipation. Yet how otherwise adequately to describe the clogging up of the human digestive system with fermented waste material is something that would take the collaboration of an Einstein and the proverbial Philadelphia lawyer. Some authorities claim, and there is no reason to doubt them, that practically every civilized adult human being suffers in some degree from constipation. It is time someone explained just why these unaccountable upsets occur in the human body. It is time someone forgot symptoms, forgot nervous disorders, forgot arthritis, diabetes and the multiplicity of troubles that affect our vital organs. It is time someone explained in simple language the exact underlying cause of all ill health. Vivisection has availed little for years. We have listened to the controversy over the morality of experimenting on live animals in the laboratories. Many conscientious persons claim that no good actually comes from such modern torture chambers. And considering results, these objectors to vivisection are not far from the truth. Science with all its laboratories cannot take to itself the healing of a single ailment. Science can help correct unnatural conditions in the human body, but nature alone can heal. Nature is the only healer. Through countless ages, before science was ever old enough for its swaddling clothes, nature alone took care of human beings and brought them successfully down through the centuries. The elephant survives in spite of the fact that no Jumbo or any other distinguished pachyderm ever qualified as a healer. The horse is still with us, and yet no horses have developed an intelligence that would have permitted them to take a degree in a scientific institution. This survival was not mere luck. This survival is a definite part of the scheme of things. Animals left alone conform to nature's laws. Man is the only animal who seeks to defy them. Let us see how man has fared because of his defiance. Now, sickness and ailments were not originally contemplated by nature in the future she pictured for man. Nature gave our bodies everything necessary to keep us well. But when man defied nature's laws, he upset the scheme of things. He tried to live his life according to his own ideas, to suit his own fancy. The unnatural life we lead, nature intended man to live permanently in the tropics. In the torrid zone, she supplied him with nourishing food in abundance. the climate was suited to the hairless condition of his body. However, men preferred to journey. He left the tropics and set out for colder climes. It was a foolish migration. Man was not equipped for such changed conditions. His body lacked protecting hair to keep him warm. Naked, he was unable to bear the rigors of the winters. So clothing became necessary. With the donning of clothing, nature's scheme for man's health was immediately thrown out of balance. The clothing shut out the free circulation of the air about man's body, and this ever-changing air was prevented from reaching the many pores in his skin. The poisons from these pores could not now be easily dissipated. And excess poisons, held in the body, meant ill health. Man needed more warmth, so he sought out caves in which to live and adopt fire as his own. Nature intended man to dwell in the open, to sleep from sun to sun. But when man found fire, he obtained light. Then came candles, oil lamps, gas, and finally the electric bulb. None of these methods for making light equaled that of the sun. Man's eyes soon became deficient. Later, man ceased to live in caves. He built habitations of wood, stone, and brick, and to prevent the entrance of the chill, he made glass. Thus he shut out not only the fresh air, but also by the use of glass he strained out the most healthful ultraviolet rays of the sun. Later, man made shoes for himself to encase his feet. Thus he encouraged more ailments by closing up the pores in the bottom of his feet. The large drains in the soles of his feet had provided additional outlets for body poisons. Man ignored the fact that nature had intended these poisons to be released into the ground. He ignored the fact that these pores were the large vents in his body. Through the use of shoes, he kept these poisons against his feet and ankles. Then he invented heels for his shoes to raise his feet out of the hot sands. And in putting this unnatural wedge under his heel, he threw his entire body too far forward. Thus he put an unnecessary strain upon his delicately balanced vital organs. Yes, indeed, man brought disease, ailments, and discomforts upon himself. He refused to work with nature and tried to work against her. But even so, nature did not abandon man to his own devices. Nature continued to fight valiantly to keep ailments and diseases from his body. She provided in his blood an army of defense, hoping that man would keep this army always in first-class condition. It should be borne in mind that the human body is nothing more than a chemical laboratory. It is filled with little live creatures, which carry on the processes we call life. If the human body would in some manner destroy these little creatures, life would instantly cease. Of course, not all these little creatures in our body are helpful ones. Many have the power to actually destroy our health. A balance condition needed for well-being. The well person is the person who has more of these beneficial little creatures than harmful ones. The state of your health depends primarily upon the balance existing between the beneficial organisms and the harmful organisms in your body. In our blood float different types of these living beneficial creatures. One of these types, which are in the vast majority, are called red corpuscles. These red corpuscles are born in the marrow of our bones and in our spleen. Yes, the marrow of our bones and our spleen are little more or less than manufacturing plants for red corpuscles. If we give to our body everything it needs to nourish these little red organisms, we thereby enable our body to bring forth billions upon billions of these red corpuscles. These red corpuscles, each one alive, only live from 30 to 90 days. They must be constantly replaced. They have their childhood, their middle age, and their time of death, just as the human body has its limit of length of life. It is the duty of these red corpuscles to separate the gases of the air. They collect oxygen from the air. These red corpuscles in our blood travel along our veins to our lungs. In our lungs, they seize the air that we breathe in and take out the oxygen. This oxygen is then delivered by them through our arteries to all parts of our body. This oxygen is used by our cells to burn up and make energy out of the nourishment our cells have received from the food we eat. Floating along with these red little organisms in our blood are also white little organisms. These white little organisms are called white corpuscles. Their duty is different from that of the red corpuscles. These white organisms constitute our defending army. They are the fighters for our bodily health. And what fighters they are!